Hello, and welcome back to Boundaries Plus. I am your host, Portia, and I am so excited to be with you. It has been quite the month since we last connected, but I am so happy to be back with you all. It has been a month of life-lifing, as it always does. It's been a particularly difficult and taxing month for women as a whole, especially Black women too, which is also not really different than any other day, but sometimes it just gets a little bit heavier. I've been thinking a lot about Roe. To catch everybody up on who Roe is a Black woman who earlier this month, it's wild to say that earlier this month, was out. A man asked her for her phone number. She said no. The man then hit her with a brick. This was outside of a club, and the men standing around did not do anything. And when I say do anything, I don't mean jump in and fight this man. I mean something as simple as asking Roe if she was okay, calling 911, telling the man to put the brick down, stopping the man before he got to her with the brick. Nothing was done. Nothing was done. And Roe then took to social media to share her story, which this is what we do. We're in 2023, and the best way to get a story out, especially if it's one that was involving harm against you and you just want to spread awareness, you turn to social media. However, when Roe turned to social media, she was met with disdain. She was met with people not believing her. She was met with people calling her a scammer, men saying that she deserved it, men saying that women deserve to be attacked or deserve to have violence against them because they're not being nice to men or that they just get too slick in the mouth. I think I heard or read somewhere. She was met with people calling her scammers, men again rushing. Men were rushing to social media and to the internet to let women know that they don't believe that women deserve protection, that women should only be protected if they're part of the family, that women should only be protected if they are docile or if they are, you know, apologetic to men or for any number of reasons that don't align with women just don't deserve violence brought against them. As for Roe, when all of this happened and she took to social media, people started reporting her page. Again, people immediately started calling her a liar, calling her a scammer. Across social media, there were lives being held with her face post-injury plastered up on the screen for people to look at and to mock. People were reporting her GoFundMe that was set up to help her with medical bills and aftercare after this. Roe went so far as to produce hospital reports. She produced police reports. People were still calling her a liar, still calling her a liar. People were calling other Black women that were standing up for her, saying that we were just being misandrist, which that's a whole nother conversation, how that's not a thing. But Black women on the outside that were trying to support Roe were also being met with all these things. And so finally, when Roe has the opportunity to be interviewed by NBC, a credible news source, this is where some people finally went silent. There's still a few people out there that are chattering and whispering, but people went silent. And when I say silent, that means that there was nothing taken back. There was no, you know what, I got this wrong. There was no, you know what, I fucked up. None of that happened. It was just now Roe is still left to deal with not only the attack against her, but the ripple effect of what happened after the fact. And this happens so often. This happens so often. We see this where people will come out and have these very strong opinions about something that happened. And oftentimes they don't have all the information, but they want to make all these grandiose statements, all these grandiose statements. And then what really comes out when the truth comes out, they have nothing to say. There's not an ounce of an effort to say to the person, even if it is speaking out into the void, if they don't know this person directly, but just to make some sort of statement of, you know what, I got this wrong. I got this wrong. And by getting this wrong, I could have perpetrated some harm. And I acknowledge that. And I want to make sure I acknowledge that so that I don't do it again. And so somebody doesn't do it in the future. That didn't happen. Am I surprised that that didn't happen? Absolutely not. But does it speak to why we continue to have these stories happen? Absolutely. Does it speak to why women are still are speaking loudly about how they don't want to be around certain men? Yes, absolutely. Are the men understanding that? Absolutely not. Men are just meeting us with calling us bedwinches or saying that we'll end up lonely with cats or unmarried, which honestly, and again, y'all know that men aren't my ministry, but that just seems like the dream at this point. So for Roe, you know, I don't know if Roe will hear this or not, but if you do, please know that my thoughts are with you and I wish you healing. I wish you healing and I want you to give yourself as much grace as possible. Speaking again about you know, information coming out right away and then new information happening and people not really accounting for that new information. This is kind of a segue and it's kind of going to make sense. Just go with me here. I've been thinking a lot about how it is second nature for the forgiveness of white women to just be at the fingertips, to just be right there. I'm thinking specifically about Cassidy Hutchinson. Cassidy Hutchinson was a former Trump supporter who has been hitting the news cycle lately because she has abandoned Trump's camp and she's done her interviews with a few tears and about how she just regrets everything that she did. And I was on one of my social media apps this morning and I saw a tweet that said, Cassidy Hutchinson has come forward and she's no longer a Trump supporter. And if we want former Trump supporters to stay with us, we have to be forgiving. And while that is true, while it is true to offer grace, while it is true, and this is me speaking from a place of, I believe in leading with grace. I believe in unlearning what you were taught and then relearning new things. I also believe that that has to be done intentionally. And here's my issue with the Cassidy Hutchinson situation. She has again shown up with a few tears saying that she regrets what happened. She regrets her part in the January 6th, but she's still voting Republican, which means that she's still voting against the interests of the collective of this country. She hasn't really atoned for her participation. She's just saying that she felt bad, not really acknowledging what her participation actually did. Bigger than that, it is the quickness to which people are wanting to forgive her and welcome her back with open arms without needing to see any type of true change. If we're talking a political climate, and you say that I am abandoning the camp of the former president, of the man who was who is a rapist, a racist, a xenophobic, a homophobic, a transphobic, who is the largest form of a bigot, and you were in that camp and you decided to say, I'm out. And now everybody wants to believe that this woman is now just on the right path for humanity. And I think about the times where Black women have made a mistake and the way that that mistake is publicized for everyone to see. And that Black woman can even take the next step to come forward and say, I got it wrong. And they are still demonized and villainized for months, if not years. And oftentimes about things that don't affect people on such a large scale as backing the former president who was every type of bigot that I just listed. But the quickness with which to forgive her is astounding to me and also maddening. And I also, that's the Cassidy Hutchinson situation. And I'm also thinking about how common that happens, or how common that is, how common of a situation that is to just quickly forgive white women. And white women, my frustration with this, and we've talked about this before, white women are the biggest upholders of systems of oppression, if for no other reason than they are often dating, marrying, raising, fucking the very men that have the power enacted to keep these systems in place. So that's the biggest upholder. So to make that mistake or make a mistake or to mess up in such a way that it affects so many other people, it should be that there should be a bigger version of accountability that we get to see. We get to see some proof in the actions that are changing, that this is not a one-off, that the fire did not just get too hot, that somebody on your PR team said, you should probably say something and fix it. A PR team for a white woman is almost like, it's almost like a magic wand, almost. And I was thinking also about, you know, along those veins, I'm thinking about Taylor Swift, and I don't like to give Taylor Swift a lot of attention for no other reason. I don't know a ton about her music. And I don't want to be met with, and I actually don't care, but I don't like to be met with a bunch of vitriol because I don't know much about her music and I just don't. So as a musicality or as a musician thing, we just don't jive. But now, you know, with Taylor Swift, and she's been in the news all the time. She was in the news a few months back when she was dating Matt Healy, who is a white supremacist and a bit of a Nazi lover and does not care about the racism that he says or any of the bigotry. She dated him briefly, was very hush-hush about that breakup, very silent about his previous behavior and even some behavior that I think popped up while they're dating, very silent about that. Taylor was able to continue to be what is considered some of America's darling and move about her life as per usual. So now Taylor Swift is rumored to be dating Travis Kelce as a football player. This is all information that makes me seem like I am a current events podcast, which I'm not, but I'm going somewhere with me. So thanks for sticking along. My concerns about Taylor Swift, and not even my concerns, my feelings about how Taylor Swift is now being met with the media is, in addition to being considered a trade up for Travis Kelce, who has previously been linked with Black women, and now people are saying that he is trading up by dating Taylor Smith or Taylor Swift. I have feelings about that. I have feelings about that. I have feelings about that because it's never been discussed about who these Black women are beyond dating Travis Kelce. People don't know who the Black women are. They know nothing about them individually. They just know that Taylor Swift has come back, quote unquote, home to play. Regardless of that, we are now coming up on an election cycle. So now there's a lot of news coming about how Taylor Swift has done so much to get people to vote. And has been so active to get people to vote. And now, once again, Taylor Swift is the name that we hear when it comes to getting young people to vote. And why that frustrates me is we have Kerry Washington, who has been doing this for years. Stacey Abrams, who's a politician, who was canvassing for years. Taylor Swift is doing now what Black women have been doing for years. And this is not to say that Taylor Swift shouldn't keep doing that. We need as many voices as possible to get bodies into the polls in a way that makes it make sense so that we can do some effective change. But we also need to make sure that we are identifying all of the people that are working with this effort to make sure that we can make effective change. To take one person who does not represent an entire demographic, to take one person who represents or is being purported to represent women, and that person is a white woman, that is really no different than taking us back to the time of the suffragettes. White women do not represent women as a whole. I think I said suffragettes. We're going to leave it in there. White women do not represent women as a whole. And I need that to be understood. White women do not represent women as a whole, because white women, again, have their own level of oppression when it comes to other women underneath that umbrella. How often do we see women talk about things and like, yeah, oh my God, I completely get it. If they're responding to a Black woman talking about some oppression that they face, white woman's like, oh, I absolutely get it. You know, as a queer woman, as though Black women, queer women don't exist, as a disabled woman, as if disabled Black women don't exist. It is so common to negate or to leave out Black women when talking about women's issues. So it would make sense. It would make the most sense to have a non-white woman and honestly a Black woman being, if we're going to create a face for something that is about women's rights, it needs to be the face of a Black woman. It needs to be the face of a person that is facing the most intersections and ultimately the most oppression. But we're not met with that. Instead, we find a white woman that makes it seem nice and pretty. And honestly, that's a huge reason why, it's a big reason why we're still running the same issues. Because white women fighting for the issues of other white women leaves Black women, Indigenous women, and other women of the global majority out of the picture. And then when Black women, Indigenous women, and other women of the global majority say something to white women, oftentimes we're met with white women tears. I'm trying. I'm doing my best. And then with those tears, when those tears are not coddled and when those tears are not placated, then, well, I tried my best. Y'all are just not grateful. You don't appreciate anything. It is a tale as old as time. It is a circus. It's a frustrating and it's a maddening thing to see. And here we are. You know, something that I've said here on this podcast and something that I've said everywhere else that you can find me is that listening to Black women is the key. And that means listening to Black women everywhere. it means letting go of that first feeling of, oh, what do you mean listen to Black women? We should listen to all women. And to really take that time to do that extra step, that critical thinking, coming back to, again, intersectionality and what it looks like to be a Black woman, to meet at all the intersections, and that all areas of oppression involve Black women, disability, queer, any of those intersections, they all come back to Black women, because Black women can meet there, listen to Black women. And ultimately, Black women want liberation. And liberation for Black women is liberation for all. On the flip side of that, if you find yourself with that first instinct of scoffing back, think to episodes or think to incidents where perhaps a Black woman has told you they just want to be left alone. I know hearing that, sometimes people can bristle and they get their feelings hurt, because being told to leave somebody alone can oftentimes revert us right back to being in school, where a kid on the playground says, leave me alone, and it becomes a bigger thing. And it's just like, I don't want to play with you and I don't want your toys. And that's not the situation that we're talking about here. Black women want to be left alone, because when we are discussed or when we are talked to, we are not included in the discussions that we need to be included in. When we are brought to the picture, we are not included in decisions that need to be made. We are often used as a prop. We are often used as a token. We are often used as a, this is what you shouldn't do, or this is how you should not act because it's too abrasive. We are not thought about. We are not considered in a way that is going to actually help for liberation. And honestly, this is why we, again, are in the same place. Liberation for Black women is liberation for all. And I want the thought process that I want to go from this particular episode, and what I want people to think about, specifically white women to think about, I want you to think about, in what way do you feel that a white woman can be an effective voice for women as a whole? After you think about that, I want you to think about in what way a Black woman can be the quote unquote face for women and women's issues. And when you do that, and this is a serious invitation to journalists, do like a column. And when you do that, look at your crossover. And I want you to identify the pros and the cons, the positives, the opportunities, the effectiveness, the intentionality, the impact. And I want you to write these things out, and I want you to look at them. I want you to look at them and understand. And while you're doing this, and while you're writing these things down, especially when you're writing down the things in the columns, or the column for Black women and how they will bring the most intention and impact and steps towards liberation, while you're writing that, if you are feeling some type of way, if it makes you feel some type of way of like, why wasn't this in my column? Think about why that is. Allow yourself to not get upset by the fact that it seems like, yes, in fact, a Black woman would be more qualified to speak on women's issues. Let go of that feeling of maybe resentment, jealousy, or the wish that you could be that person. Let go of that and understand the reason why it is, again, that a Black woman is going to be the best person in that position. Again, the liberation for Black women is a liberation for all. You are talking about the person speaking on women's issues being somebody that was once and still today often not considered a human being, not considered a worth of any value, oftentimes considered nothing more than a portal for rape and abuse. Black women have been through every level of violence and continue to go through every level of violence and oppression and being held back. Black women face all of that every single day. And if we are able to find a way to grant some true freedom to Black women, that benefits everybody. Black women do not want to take anything from anybody else. We realize and we recognize, and this is a speech that you will hear from me and from other educators, we understand that we don't have to take anything from anybody else in order to find liberation for us. It is not a zero-sum effort. It is not a situation where like, well, in order for it to be liberated, we have to take a little bit from this bucket, from that bucket. We are not talking about economics. We are not talking about a financial budget. We are talking about adding to that everybody gets a slice of this liberation, not somebody else gets a smaller slice. We don't have to take anybody from anything from anybody else. That's my journal prompt for you. That's my journal prompt for you. And the biggest takeaway, again, is I want you to understand, especially today and every day, but especially today and what's been going on over the last few months or the last month, really the last few months, but the last month specifically with Black women, understand that if you are told by a Black woman that they want to be left alone, don't get your feelings hurt. Think about why that is. Think about why that is. And instead of doing your best to get on that person's good side so that they want to spend time with you or they get to see that you're one of the quote unquote good ones, go out and do something so they can see that you're one of the quote unquote good ones, and go out and do something so that they can see that what you actually care about, where your concern actually is decolonizing and liberation and dismantling systems of oppression, and that your concern really isn't just being liked by a Black woman. I think I've given you all a lot to think about. I've given myself a lot to think about, actually, but I want you to, again, just think about what's been said and journal. I really encourage you to take this time and just to kind of journal out, again, the thoughts with a white woman and a Black woman and what that makes you feel like. Take it a step further. What did you feel when you were doing this? Because what you feel after writing those things down, what you feel after writing these opportunities, these characteristics, these positives, these things that can be brought to this fight, the next important step is how you feel writing those things down and then what you're going to do in response to those feelings. Don't ignore what you're feeling. Allow it to drive you. Allow it to shift your thinking. Allow it to help you, again, continue to unlearn what you've been taught and to decolonize and to truly, truly, truly show up in this fight for liberation. I love you all. I love you dearly. Make sure that you are staying hydrated. I appreciate you being with me, and I will see you all soon.